Dean Freemuth, president and founder of the Freemuth Group, a domestic and international energy and environmental consulting firm and a global fellow with the Woodrow Wilson Center, is my guest this week. I'm Lee Cravat, and this is episode 12 of The Climate Champions. Each episode, I sit down with someone who is helping to mitigate climate change. We discuss when they became passionate about the issue, their vision for the future, and how they are contributing. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know. My website is www.cravatenergyinnovations.com, and you can send me an email from my contact page. Ladine advises and conducts policy outreach and advocacy for corporate, trade association, and not-for-profit clients on energy, global climate change, transboundary water management, and related security issues. She and I work together through the Gridwise Alliance, where she leads its policy efforts and has really helped me understand the national policy side of the energy business. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Cravat, and I'm talking to Ladine Freemuth of the Freemuth Group. She is the president and the founder, and they focus on domestic and international energy and environmental consulting. That's a lot of stuff. You've done a lot of great stuff.
Thank you.
I'm excited to talk to you about it. So what first made you realize climate change was real and something very important that you wanted to focus on?
Yes, so I approach this topic more from a policy angle rather than the technological or engineering perspective.
I know you were telling me everybody else was an engineer.
Yes, and I actually got into this more through my studies. And here too, I think maybe my perspective is a bit different from some of the other climate champions that you've interviewed.
So you don't believe in it?
I went to the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. I studied climate change. My professor had a...
Can I stop you? Why? Why did you study climate change if you hadn't had like an aha moment yet? What made you do that?
I had worked previously in the environmental field, focusing on waste management and pollution prevention out of college. And I decided that I wanted to focus on international environmental issues. And the coursework that was covered in the International Environmental Program at the Fletcher School, one of the topics included climate change. And I became very interested in the topic, both from the seriousness and magnitude of the problem, as well as the negotiation and diplomacy angle. And my professor is a contributor to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I had the opportunity actually to do some research with him for his contributions to the IPCC. And in addition to that, our classwork ran negotiations in parallel to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which was being crafted and negotiated at that time. This was in the mid-1990s, so it was before the Kyoto Protocol, which is the implementing mechanism for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, came into being. So this was in the very early stages, yes. And climate change was just becoming a major issue on the world stage. And as I said, I got interested in this because of the magnitude of the issue and the diplomacy angle. I then had the opportunity to work for Congressman Frank Pallone. He is now the chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
That is very exciting.
And we wrote one of the first pieces of legislation that takes a market-based approach to reducing greenhouse gas emissions from stationary power plants. So it included carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas emission, as well as other air pollutants. And this is a market-based approach. Unfortunately, we still don't have that legislation today.
I'm waiting for, because I know you've gotten in there with stuff you've done.
Well, we have regional approaches.
Yes.
And the Clean Power Plan was based on this idea. So.
Exactly.
And also at that time, we had support from some of the electric utilities and some of the environmental groups, not all of them, but some of them. So probably it was a good first step. And here we are more than 20 years later and we still don't have this legislation. So
wow,
I think it was a practical approach at that time.
What do you think about the future?
I'm very optimistic about the future in many ways. One, 70% of the population now agrees that climate change is happening, it's real, and that humans are contributing to it. We see over the last decade or so, more and more electric utilities, auto manufacturers, oil companies, accept that climate change is happening and that humans are contributing to it as well.
First, you have to admit you have a problem.
Exactly. We see more and more governors, mayors, and corporations stepping up and taking action on climate change because they realize the importance of the need for market certainty. Corporations realize that it affects their supply chains, and consumers are demanding it. So they are taking action for multiple reasons, and of course, because of the seriousness of the problem. I'm also encouraged, I give guest lectures to university students, and I used to ask whether they believe whether climate change is happening and if it's real and whether humans are contributing to it. And I no longer need to ask that because they just see it as a given.
You know, that is super exciting. I did not know that. When you used to try to convince them that there was climate change, how did you do that?
I explained climate change by saying that we have six greenhouse gases. The two most common are carbon dioxide and methane, and that they act as a greenhouse or heat trapping mechanisms in the atmosphere. And it's like having a car on a hot summer day that traps the heat inside. And that,
oh, you're good. That's the best I've heard.
Thank you. And that humans are contributing to climate change by generating power for power plants, transportation, as well as through our agricultural practices and deforestation. And over time, we have seen that these heat trapping capabilities and the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are increasing.
And they don't dissipate.
They don't dissipate, again, because this acts as a greenhouse. It
yes.
keeps everything trapped. Yeah. The evidence now is overwhelming, and the scientific evidence over time has become increasingly clear that humans are contributing and that the problem is very serious. And we must act now to address climate change if we're going to stabilize greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and then reduce them over time to prevent the worst projected impacts of climate change.
So you don't think we waited too long?
I think we have a window of time where we can continue to act. I think as we wait more and more, the costs will increase. And we know that typically the costs of being proactive and mitigating the impacts of climate change and implementing the types of resources like renewable resources such as solar and wind, that it's more cost effective to do so on the front end rather than responding or recovering to disasters on the back end. We have a dramatic increase in the number of billion with a B dollar weather events over the past several years. And again, I like to call the issue global climate change because we also see extremes in cold and warm temperatures, and climate change refers to the trends. So we are also seeing dramatic increases in sea level rise, storm surge, and dramatic increases in extreme weather events, such as hurricanes and wildfires. And so we have to act on the front end.
Yeah, I kind of think that even if it is too late at some point, we can't acknowledge that. That's not our way. It's too late, so let's just forget about it and do more and not worry about it. I'm just amazed that we're not taking it more seriously already.
Certainly, again, the threats are more compelling. We have seen the increase in temperatures over the last few years and over the past decade or so dramatically increasing. We see records set around the world. And again, the extreme events such as wildfires and hurricanes, typhoons, droughts, floods. And interestingly, the number of droughts to floods is about 2 or 3 to 1. There are more droughts than floods, and the impacts are very severe. And we also see that all of these issues are interconnected. So as we have more climate change and more changes in temperature, we also see an increase in the scarcity of resources such as water and food. And the pressures on those resources grows, especially as we also see population growth. So the magnitude and the security threats that are related also will increase. And I approach this from a security angle as well, that this really has an impact on our national security and on global security.
Yeah, we had an ecosystem that worked, and we're really messing with it.
We are, although it's interesting. I heard someone recently say that as you were saying earlier, the situation is becoming very dire and we must act now if we're going to prevent reaching a tipping point where beyond which we don't know what the impacts could be. But recently someone said that the earth will survive, but humans might not.
My wife says that. She says the earth is robust and strong. It's just us. But I think you have to imagine we'd find a way to survive. The real question is, what will it be compared to how it is now? I think. Or do you not think we could even survive?
I think beyond a certain point, and the scientists say that that is an increase of 1.5 or 2 degrees centigrade. Beyond that, we don't know what the impacts could be, and we don't know whether we would be able to survive or not.
Making me even more nervous. Okay, I'm going to ask this silly question. I only say it's silly because of what we just talked about. But why is this personally important to you?
Sure, it's personally important because I do realize the magnitude of the problem, and I feel a responsibility to act if we're going to protect our planet for the next generation and generations to come.
Tell me about your journey at the Freemyth Group.
I was working at an environmental consulting firm, and I had the opportunity to leave and take one of the clients with me. I never expected to go out on my own. I've now had my firm for 14 years, so I've been extremely fortunate to have my own firm. I have a range of clients, including nonprofit organizations, corporations, and other entities, and I've been very fortunate to work with amazing people, and such as yourself, through the GridWise Alliance, which has been one of my clients for the last 5 years, and to have amazing opportunities.
Cool. And before the Freemyth Group?
Before the Freemyth Group, I was at this one firm where I left and took one of the clients with me. And prior to that, I worked on Capitol Hill in the House and Senate. I also have had short positions with the US EPA and AID, Agency for International Development. I also have worked overseas in Russia, the former Soviet Union, in Siberia, where I managed a waste management and pollution prevention project that was a bilateral project between the United States and Russia. It turns out that project actually is saving 20 lives a year to this day.
Wow. So you're a fellow.
I'm a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center. I have a global fellowship with the Global Women's Leadership Initiative, and I'm working to advance the role of women and link that to the energy and environmental fields as well.
Yeah, there's not a lot of women in energy.
No, unfortunately not, but we're trying to change that.
Yes, I think it's important that we do, because the more different perspectives you have, the more rich the solution will be.
My hope is that we will have more leaders in the future that are more representative of the entire population as well, in terms of gender and other racial and ethnic diversity, because I think those perspectives will help in terms of advancing political will and leadership. And we need to look beyond the short-term political cycles when we're talking about these issues.
Yes. Tell me about some setbacks that you've had.
Well, certainly the cap and trade bill, while it is a major setback, I also do think that it has been one of the biggest successes. When I talk about it with students and other younger people especially, they are very excited to know the history of the climate change policy and political process in this country. And I do think that it helped to lay the groundwork. It may have been a little premature at the time, but over time, as I said, we've had an increase in the number of types of entities that have come to support this type of approach. And I think even in Congress, we're seeing more and more members of Congress come to acknowledge that climate change is real.
They just need to do something about it.
They do.
Yeah. What are you most proud of?
I know Steve Hauser mentioned this as well, but the Title 13 or Smart Grid title of the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007 is also one of my biggest accomplishments. The client that I was representing at the time was particularly focused on the demonstration projects, and that, as you know, translated into billions of dollars in the 2009 stimulus package, or American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, and that really jump-started the whole smart grid industry. So that's a huge accomplishment. Another accomplishment are the energy efficiency appliance standards, which I helped draft when I was in Congress.
Oh, that's very cool.
Thank you. I hope they won't get rolled back.
In California, it's tremendous how that's reduced the amount of electric usage.
And I come at the issue of climate change from a very practical approach. I found when I worked on the Hill that we couldn't mention the words climate change after a certain point in time, shortly after the cap and trade legislation. And rather than falling on my sword over using the term climate change or greenhouse gas emissions, I decided to take a more practical approach and focus on energy efficiency and renewable energy, where we could find bipartisan approaches to getting things done.
You know, the name of this podcast is Climate Champions, so you're not going to get away from the term climate change.
I know. Although even now, again, a focus on resilience and security are ways to take practical approaches that still resonate across both sides of the aisle.
It's going to be about money in my mind. And if you can't present it in a way that money is part of the equation, it's going to be very, very difficult. But because of the amount of money we have to spend after an event, that's money that counts. And so you start funneling that into proactive means, and maybe that'll work.
Exactly. And that's also, I think, one of my biggest accomplishments is in the past year, again, through the Gridwise Alliance, we worked to help pass legislation that is entitled the Disaster Recovery and Reform Act. Believe it or not, current law had said that if infrastructure is damaged or destroyed by an extreme event, it had to be rebuilt in the same manner.
You did a lot of work on that.
Thank you. Yes, with other groups. We were able to change the law, though, and now when damaged or destroyed critical infrastructure occurs, it can be rebuilt in a more resilient manner.
Yeah, now Puerto Rico is talking about mini grids.
There you go.
We're not doing micro grids and we're not doing nano grids. We need mini grids.
All of the above.
The still microgrids to me. Billy Joel song. So what's your vision for the future?
I think we're going to require less consumption of food and products, and hopefully that will improve the public health and the environment.
What do you mean require?
We're going to need to take serious action, and at the individual level as well as with corporations, cities, states, and hopefully eventually at the national level, as well as at the global level. And again, the whole rest of the world already is starting to act. I also see...
Before you go on, you're talking about sacrifice. Sacrificing your way of life to some extent in an elective way instead of when the climate forces you to change.
Exactly. I think, again, it's making choices now versus more severe choices we might have to make later. I'm also excited on multiple fronts. On the technological front, I think the integration of information and telecommunications and electric technologies are going to enable dramatic changes, some of which we can't even foresee, the same way we couldn't necessarily foresee the impacts of changes that would come about due to the internet or mobile phones. Changes in traffic management, autonomous vehicles. We may not even need to own cars if we can be picked up by an autonomous vehicle in some cases, or take electric mass transportation. That might enable parking spaces to be freed up and used for more green spaces and nature. On the electric sector front in particular, I see changes in policy and changes to the regulatory and business models. Utilities increasingly will change from providing commodities to providing services, and I believe they will be compensated, as will third parties, for providing those services. And on the policy front, as I said, I think we will have changes to policies and business and regulatory models. So changes in many ways, and some of which I think we can't yet foresee.
Yeah, that's quite a vision. That's exciting that you've thought it through so much. But I think it's difficult for people to sacrifice how they live today. I think that's one of the reasons politics are the way they are right now, because people didn't like the change that was happening and it was too fast for them.
I agree. As you said, though, I think it's making choices now and changing our behavior In some ways, it's not sacrifice, though, as we've seen with energy efficiency and as we optimize resources with smart technologies, it may not require sacrifice. It may be changes that come about due to increased optimization and efficiency that don't require sacrifice.
Even if it is a sacrifice, it's a sacrifice that is an investment in our future.
Exactly.
So we make investments where we put off what we want today for what we know we need tomorrow.
And again, as we've both said, the costs after an extreme event are far more significant, billions and billions of dollars after these storms, loss of life, loss of property.
Yeah.
So it's important to act now.
So do you have any questions for me?
Is there a transformative event that you've experienced in your career that led you to this point?
So from a climate change perspective, I've already answered that, but there was a moment that I went through a really big change about how I saw myself in the world of business, you know, in the world of what I can give back. And I was always very happy in Silicon Valley writing code. I had great teams that I got to lead, and I love that. But the bottom line was I was trying to get promotions. I was trying to get raises. When I took the job at Sempra Energy, I didn't realize at the time that I was stepping into a new world where it wasn't just about money. I had my daughters one weekend when my wife was traveling, so I had to get some work done, so I brought them in to work with me. And I let them write on the whiteboard. I made them hot chocolates. They made me some drawings that I have to this day, you know, that I saved from that weekend. And they were so well behaved. I was trying to figure out how to reward them. I did take them for ice cream, by the way. But first, I took them to the top floor. This is downtown San Diego. It was twilight because I'd been working most of the day. We went to my boss's office, which had an incredible view of San Diego. And my daughter, my older daughter, who was maybe 6 at that time, took that moment to ask me what I did.
Wow.
For a living. She had done it many times, and I always said, I work on computers. Daddy works on computers. Now, to her, working on computers means playing Reader Rabbit. Like, that's what she did on computers. But because the lights were coming on in the city and it was so beautiful, I had this thought, and I'm getting chills right now as I'm telling it, and I got chills then, and I often do when I talk about this. Instead of saying I work on computers, I said, Dad makes sure the lights come on. Now, it's true, I was only on the computer side of things. But I realized that for the first time in my life, it wasn't just about money. It wasn't just about getting promoted. It was about doing something that mattered, and in this case, mattered to the city of San Diego. It really mattered. I took it very seriously that my systems that I was responsible for didn't go down because the repercussions of it that were more than just, do I get a raise or not? So that was the first, that was the beginning of my journey. And then over time, I started learning more about climate change issues and renewable energy. I got involved with strategy for the company, and I'll leave it at that for now. Is it okay if I wrap it up?
Yes.
Okay. I came into your house, you made me espresso and said hello, and then we talked for a while, and I found out you were a fellow. You were very concerned that maybe we would all go to heaven, so you really got involved in the legislation in 2007. You have a lot of students, and now when you ask them, they say, you betcha, about climate change when you lecture. Look, I really like all the statistical points that you made, and one day you're going to get rewarded for your thoughts about cap and trade. 14 years ago, you faced your fears, and now you've been there for 14 years.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I recorded the majority of the Climate Champion podcasts prior to launching the series. So until Ladine, none of my guests knew a wrap was coming. They were all really surprised. But Ladine had listened to them, so she had this great look of anticipation as we were winding down the interview, knowing the wrap was coming, which I really loved, but it also put a lot of pressure on me not to blow it. If you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And be sure to catch episode 13 next Monday when Cassie Bowe, Vice President at Energy Impact Partners, is my guest.
Forbes awarded her 30 under 30 in energy. Intimidating! Also, if you are in San Diego and want some great laughs, most nights I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Find a City Improv or both. To confirm specific dates or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Ladine has a renowned ability to facilitate connections and negotiate among diverse stakeholders on complicated issues to help pass legislation and achieve other policy objectives. She does so, in part, by leveraging a virtually unparalleled network in the energy and environmental arenas in Washington, D.C., across the U.S., and globally to help mitigate climate change.